I want to spit tax. I want to be evil and cheat at gas. I want to be wicked. I want to tell lies. I want to be mean and throw my ties. I want to wake up in the morning with that dark frown face. I want to see some dissipation in my face. I want to be evil.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing Podcast. I'm Kate Prusser, Managing Editor of Lookout Landing, and with me is, as always, John Troop. And John, how are you?
Doing all right, Kate. It's finally the season where all of the trees out in front of my house are no longer just dripping sticky leaves onto my car
and making it
miserable, so I'm quite content. I'm quite pleased, like you, I believe, just watched perhaps one of the best baseball games that I've ever seen in my life. Did you catch the whole game start to finish?
I was out at a fun, newish place in White Center called Beer Star, where they have 48 beers on tap.
Well, look at you.
I know.
Kate about town.
It was pretty great. and they have now hooked on a Woody's Burgers next to it. So even though they don't serve food, you can like go over there and get your... And it was my first time having a Woody's Burger, and I had the Fig and the Pig. And I died of joy.
Now, is there a fig actually involved in this? Because
there's a scoop of fig preserves and blue cheese and bacon, and I pretty much just want to live inside the burger from now on.
you're gonna volunteer to be to be the fig or pig in the snare.
Oh, I would happily take whatever role the burger would have me in. I'm just a girl standing in front of a burger. No, but it was super fun, and like I think I was one of maybe five people watching the game, but that was before things got really crazy. I was there the first six innings maybe, and then headed home, and then caught the rest of it agape in front of my television, as it were.
Yeah, it's... I watched the first few innings and saw Verlander's just outright dominance. And I think I'd been talking with a few folks, and I was thinking, like, it's going to be like 100 degrees and Verlander's like pissed and going to have to, and like has to show up. Like, he's going to start throwing at like 96 and going to finish at like 100.
Yeah.
And he pretty much did.
As good as Verlander has been all year, I really feel like he's hit another gear in the postseason. Like, he just seems so focused and so determined. Yeah. And, you know, maybe as a guy who is like a little later on in his career, is feeling like this is his chance.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was, he had so much sort of deliberation about whether he was even going to accept a trade, because as I recall, he wanted to go to either the Dodgers or the Cubs, and it was only at the like literally the last 5 seconds that he okayed the trade to Houston, if I recall, before the deadline. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's tough to say from a Mariners perspective whether going forward that will, you know, be hurtful, because obviously they have, you know, Houston now has another ace, but they also have $28 million wrapped up in that guy and a couple fewer, you know, very solid prospects. But
yeah, well, meantime, they're paying Carlos Correa, like, I don't know, a bag of peanuts.
Yeah, I believe $550,000 a year.
League minimum for him and Springer, right? Springer is also...
Yep, and Bregman.
Yeah, and I mean, Bregman, well, God knows what Bregman thinks. He obviously thinks very highly of himself, but, you know, was it Correa who asked for a pay increase and was denied, or was it Springer?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I think it was Springer first, just because he was there, because he'd been around longer.
He'd been called up earlier, yeah.
But I yeah, and I mean, you know, when you are a young player in MLB, that is unfortunately, you know, your lot is, you know, there are a lot of good things that that baseball does better than other sports in as it pertains to, you know, pay for players. And the fact that $550,000 is guaranteed, no matter whether he gets hurt or
true.
you know, whatever it may be, you know, that is good. But yeah, it, you know, the Astros getting 12 first round picks in the last 5 years, I believe,
something
or six
that could
years,
not happen anymore.
You know, has really. I mean, you know, it's not groundbreaking to say, hey, they tanked and it paid off, but. But you know, they hit enough that, and they got enough sort of upstart, guys and then, you know, committed to, smart analytics and as well as, you know, smart, you know, new analysis and, you know, things like when Verlander came over, you know, telling him, you know, hey, we've been videotaping you and you should adjust your angle on this pitch just a little bit and you're going to get a lot more movement, like,
yeah,
thing, you know, things that
going after
never
the right kind of player. Mm-hmm. For all the aces that were available, it does seem like Verlander specifically, as a pretty cerebral pitcher,
mm-hmm.
Who is open to making changes,
right,
who would listen to that kind of feedback, you know, which is not a small task when you
right.
have had the kind of success that he's had.
Mm.
So we were talking the other day that's sort of how the Astros, as a smaller market team, can compete. They can say, mm. hey, come to us and we will improve you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing these things that not other people are doing, and we will make a better player out of you. We might not pay you a ton of money, but we will set you up to get real paid.
Yeah. I think we ended up describing it as they're offering internships almost. You know, like, because, you know, they don't have the money that many other teams have. They have flexibility in that they're still paying their stars, you know, peanuts, as you said, but, you know, they can take a guy who maybe is only willing to sign a 1-year deal, but wants to have a big year and wants a shot at a championship and say,
right.
hey, we see something that you can improve. You trust us. You know, you'll have a good year. Our team will have a good year. And, you know, and next year, if you are going to go and sign a big contract, you're going to get a particularly big contract because we did this good thing. You know, we'll see how that actually pans out this offseason because I don't, you know, they have, I believe, Beltran coming off the books.
Oh, yeah.
But
as
I
far
don't
as
know
we're,
how much
we're,
else they
we're
have.
Praising the Astros, let's remember that they did, in fact, drive a truck full of money up to Carlos Beltran's.
That's true.
And I know and that you are a huge fan of that deal.
What was it? They I mean, just in the last, you know, it's one of those things where, like, the smartest teams make huge errors. Like, you know, Beltran obviously, you know, was a big whiff for them, but, like, you know, this is the same team that DFA'd JD Martinez a few years ago, that, you know, gave up on, you know, several players who ended up turning into excellent, you know, excellent players, guys that, you know, and also, you know, had two straight, you know, drafts where they took pitchers that completely didn't pan out, which, you know, that's what pitching prospects do. Obviously, that's not necessarily that they completely whiffed, but only to say that, you know, they had, you know, Mark Appel and Brady Aiken, the number one overall picks, back-to-back years, you know, neither one worked out whatsoever, and, you know, I believe Aiken didn't even, you know, sign, and
no, that was one, because when the thing came up with the Oregon State pitcher with the arm injury, what's his name?
Yeah. But that's how they ended up getting Bregman.
Yes, worked out okay.
Right. But, you know, so this, you know, it's sort of a mixed bag, obviously. But
it's almost like baseball is super hard.
It's a little bit difficult.
Predicting it is really difficult.
You know, and sort of, you know, it's neat to watch this. You know, in a vacuum, it's neat to watch this cool strategy, this sort of untested strategy, work out and sort of shift the way that teams are thinking and teams are approaching stuff. As a Mariners fan, it's infuriating.
Well, it's very frustrating to see, like, mm-hmm. Other teams be able to develop their blue chip talent, because we are just so far from that. You know, we're so far from seeing Kyle Lewis, maybe not Nick Knighter as much, although I know that there are debates about whether or not he's a blue chip talent.
I'd give him a
mint green chip, maybe. Yeah, could he have mint green? He has taken a huge step forward this year.
For sure.
I'm really, really pretty excited about him. And I just think, like, you see so much improvement on the farm. I really do think that it's they're getting the, as we've talked about before, they're getting these mid-tier guys to their talent ceilings.
Yeah.
So imagine what they can do when they have some preternaturally talented guys.
And that's, and we're going to talk about the AFL in a sec, but that's what I'm most excited for next year. I mean, obviously I'm excited to watch, you know, especially if they make some major offseason moves, mm-hmm. you know, and add some players, you know, I'm excited to watch the major league team, but I think, and I'm curious if you have felt this way, I would imagine you have to some degree, you know, the team has, it has been frustrating because there is some top tier talent in the organization. You know, in the Mariners organization, and especially you know, after the draft this year, it's like, okay, Evan White, you know,
Sam Carlson,
Sam Carlson, mm-hmm. You know, you have interesting players, maybe not, you know, White. I think people, you know, it's sort of uncertain because he's a little scrawny, and it's like, you know, if you're most notable skill is you're an incredible defensive first baseman, it's hard to say, but you know, he shows up, he hits really well in, you know, short season A ball for 2 weeks, and you know, I'm trying to plan out, okay, when can I go to an Aqua Sox game, I want to watch this guy, I want to talk, and he's hurt and just doesn't play, you know, so
right.
It's like, you know, Kyle Lewis is like, oh, you know, I'm so excited, you know, this has been an awesome player and really is someone that, you know, you could envision roaming around the outfield for years and years and years, and he's being played really cautiously with to make sure he's you know, so it's like this whole season was,
and Carlson too, we didn't get to see any of him either. He threw like what, three innings Arizona, and then has just been, and I understand
this is
how we want them to progress with these, we want them to be careful, like, but it does not, it makes something that's already far off feel even further away.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's sort of one of those situations where, you know, we've seen, as you said, you know, those mid-tier guys maxed out on their talent, you know, guys like Bishop, you know, Braden Bishop, guys
who
like,
just missed the cut to be one of Baseball America's top 20 prospects in the Cal League, like it has been very gratifying to see people jump on the Braden Bishop. Like, I think a lot of people were, you can't deny his talent with the glove in center field, like he is an elite defender, mm-hmm. But this year a lot of people started to really buy in after the swing changes, after he was able to post those numbers not just across the Cal League but at Arkansas as well. The Texas League, I mean, those pitchers are no joke, you know, like he was hitting against Walker Buehler, who's one of the top prospects in baseball. So that's been really exciting.
It's nice to see, and it's nice to see sort of folks who, or players who, you know, maybe you're not going to be, you know, there's, you know, there's a difference between, you know, huge impact players and guys who, you know, maybe they are part of you know, they aren't part of, you know, any franchise's like centerpiece plans, but you're still got you still there's an MLB player in this, and that's still interesting to track. And so, you know, watching guys like that emerge, and, you know, with in Modesto, there are, you know, you're seeing relievers like, you know, Matt Festa and Art Warren, and even, you know, Wyatt Mills, who they just drafted.
Yeah, who's in, you know, according per his Instagram, is in Peoria right now. So
excellent.
They're starting to assemble the squad. I don't know what, because the Mariners obviously aren't doing instructionals.
Yeah.
So I don't know what everybody is doing down there, but I do know, because I see Instagram posts from, like, they're at Phoenix Suns game. I'm like, okay, you're there. You're there. Why? Like, trying to, you know, I've got this board, and I'm trying to map out why everyone might be in the same place.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's a situation where, you know, we've had essentially 2 years of not really having front-end talent that we can watch and that we can follow, you know, because it just, you know, last year, I think I want to say Alex Jackson was the top prospect, I guess, like during the 2016 season. And he, you know, had a big
he was
step
up
back.
There, and DJ Peterson was also
right,
up there.
Right, exactly.
And both are no longer in the organization.
Right.
Man, being a first round pick counts for a lot.
Yes. Yes, it does. You know, and so it's been exciting to watch these sort of mid-tier guys, you know, take steps forward, partially because, you know, you need those kind of guys to fill out MLB rosters. You know, you need, you know, your corner outfielders, you know, your guys who are going to be one and a half, two-win players and, you know, provide you with the depth to sustain if one of your main guys goes down, or, you know, provide a little bit extra, you know, so that you don't just have to rely on stars like the Mariners have, you know, in 2016 and 2014.
Right.
You know, you want
you need some, like, Derek Fishers, right? Do you think Derek Fisher is a fair, like, Derek
the,
Fisher
the
is
Houston
some
outfielder?
Damn, yeah, he is some damn good depth.
Absolutely.
Like, he could start a lot of other places, but in Houston, he is some damn good depth.
Exactly. And so I'm so looking forward to next year and seeing, hopefully, not only just baseball played by guys like White and Lewis and Carlson, although Carlson's going to be, like, still 18, I think, when he's pitching next year. So, you know, he's a ways away. But, you know, seeing more from Neidert and, you know, seeing, you know, hopefully, like, Andrew Moore get more time in Tacoma, and seeing Max Posey get more time to develop, you know, just getting the sense of, okay, you know, we've had essentially a year of, well, these guys are doing something interesting, but it's very difficult to see them becoming the next core of a team, but, you know, they can be the glue of a team, if you will. So seeing those, I guess, potential future core guys get to play and hopefully see the same types of developments, that we've seen, the floors raised, on some of these guys, to see that then from the guys whose ceilings are so high, that's what I want to see and what I'm looking forward to, and why I'm enjoying, you know, even just the little bits of action that we're getting in the AFL now.
For sure. It is definitely fun to see Kyle Lewis bust into an AFL game and make get a ton of hits, and he and Bishop actually sort of said, oh, well, because they both had great games, right? They both had, I think between the two of them, they had like three doubles.
6 for 8, 3 doubles, and I think a walk each.
And that was with Lewis leading off and Bishop hitting ninth. So they were kind of back-to-backing it. And they said, you know, we feed off of each other. We play off of each other. I was like, oh, wow, two Mariners prospects getting their own MLB Pipeline article written about them. Like, that's exciting. And, you know, since there's no more Tyler O'Neill, he was the thing that we had to be excited about last year. And I think there are still a lot of fans who are mad about that trade. My mom, who doesn't even follow baseball that closely, is mad we gave up Tyler O'Neill because she got invested in him in a very short time. So we need some fun things to be excited about. And that is why I find myself with limited patience for people who want to, like, throw a lot of water on the Eric Foglia excitement. Because, yeah, okay, he's older. He's one of those maybe limited ceiling guys. It's hard to envision what kind of an MLB role he could have. Mm-hmm. But he's out there just hitting and hitting and hitting. He's leading the AFL in hitting. And, you know, let's take a moment and be excited about it. We have so little else to be excited about. Be excited about it. Be excited about it with expectations in check, but be excited about it.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I mean, for Foglia, you know, I think I can see him certainly, if he continues doing this, like, he can have a platoon role, you know, especially if he can show that he can play first base.
Which he is apparently doing quite a nice job of, has made some nice picks at first, which is pretty impressive for somebody who I think had made, like, single-digit starts at first base before.
You know, and so it's, you know, if you essentially are, you know, you have a skill set that looks like Danny Valencia or, you know, I don't know. I mean, Trumbo is a very different comparison because Trumbo has power on power on power. But, you know, if you can see a little more power develop from Foglia, and if you can see him just continue to hit, then, you know, that's not necessarily a guy that's like, oh, he's going to, you know, also be a huge development for the Mariners, but it's, hey, we found a guy who can have a positive impact, you know, at the higher levels of the system and even at the major league level in, what was it, like the 27th round?
Something 24th, I think.
24th round?
Yeah.
And so that's neat to see. And hopefully that can continue. And I'm excited to see him. You know, I think we both were sort of annoyed that they didn't give him a shot in Arkansas.
Double A,
this year.
Yeah, absolutely. But he had the Twins.
Yeah.
So I think that might have been like just a, there's 1 month left to play of the season. You're going through the championships. Mm-hmm. I just got an at-bat notification that Mariners have outrighted Ryan Garten to AAA Tacoma. So.
Not astonishing, I guess.
I guess. I mean, I thought he was a free agent.
He's got ARB for a while.
Yeah, because we traded some actual stuff for him.
Marjima for
Mishevitz and Renhifo, Luis Renhifo.
Yeah, that's right.
Renhifo is a glove first shortstop. Mm-hmm. Mishevitz is actually promising, and the biscuit that he got promoted to AAA. Mm-hmm. So if he pans out for the Rays, I'll feel pretty upset that we. Well, I don't know. I mean, I am a big believer in Mike Marjima, so I can't be too mad about it. Garten, however, is.
He's weird. He's got way higher strikeout numbers in the minors than I either thought or makes any sense to me. But hasn't quite seen it translate to the majors yet, so, you know, perhaps that can be built on. But yeah, they, you know, he's the kind of guy you want in AAA as relief depth. Mm-hmm. You know, him like Evan Marshall, guys like that who throw reasonably hard and have some, you know, some secondary stuff you can call up, they'll be okay, you know, and they're churning out relievers in the lower levels, so you know, hopefully
we get to
continue.
Keep all of them. If they trade Art Warren, I'll be real mad.
Well, so I think we're going to try and look into this in a little more depth on the site, but I'm since we're talking about the pitching depth,
or lack thereof,
but you, there's pitching depth in a sense in that there are a lot of decent relievers, and maybe I'm higher on the relief or the relievers in the bullpen than you are, but when I look at the Mariners bullpen, what it could be or should be next year, I think it's going to be a strength. You know, it was supposed to be, you know, ideally it was going to be a strength for them this year, and I think in a sense it was, but just because the rotation was so appalling, they, you know, their numbers are dragged down because they were overused.
Everyone was asked to do stuff that they probably shouldn't have been doing.
Right.
Casey Lawrence did not need to be a long reliever. Exactly. Casey Lawrence was great in one inning bursts.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think DePoto tried to make him be Wade LeBlanc because he also came from being DFA'd by the Blue Jays. So tried to make him be Wade LeBlanc. He could not be Wade LeBlanc. Yeah. Oh no. Cubs claim Hanneman back off waivers from Mariners. Connor's going to be
pour
so upset.
Pour one out for Connor, yeah.
Pour one out for Connor.
And DFA Mike Freeman to do so.
Oh, this just, it's such a wheel. So we're getting into things getting weird. That is too bad because Hanneman, I thought, had some real interesting...
Well, he looks like a baseball player.
Does that.
But when he swings a baseball bat, he doesn't look like a baseball player that much.
No, his swing sucks.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because he lost 2 years of development. I think Jerry has decided that the new market inefficiency is Mormons.
Mormons and former Playboy Mansion employees.
Yes.
And just toss them together and make a
they'll
fun
all learn from each other.
Gumbo.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam Law,
who is not a Playboy Mansion expert.
No, he's a Mormon.
He is a Mormon who did his mission work in, I want to say, Zimbabwe. Something interesting like that. Interesting cat, Adam Law. Also sang the national anthem before one of the Travelers games this year.
Mm-hmm.
Very multifaceted. We are also collecting incredibly interesting relievers like Ralston Cash in AA, DFA'd by the Dodgers. Also a very, very interesting human. So, I mean, I guess in light of them actually being good players, we're just getting the most interesting life experiences we can. Best motivational speakers ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird because I thought that Hanneman, especially because they gave him so much playing time towards the end of the year and over Ian Miller, who I thought deserved a shot.
Yeah.
And at least could have helped us out on the bases.
That whole thing was bizarre. I still have not seen any reasonable explanation behind why Guillermo was playing and why, if Guillermo really was so, like, because, you know, it's like if it's, I don't know, if it's like Cruz or Cano, like you know, last year, I guess in 2016, like Nelson Cruz was playing with whatever it was, back spasms or something, you know, and it was like, well, he got like a shot of cortisone so that he could play more because it's in the middle of the playoff race and he's, you know, he's such a crucial player. And it's like, Guillermo is playing poorly. He's obviously impacted by this. And, you know, we have other outfielders, you know, I don't get that one at all. And, you know, it's not like the end of the world that, you know, they traded Leonis, you know, and I'm happy that Leonis got to play, you know, in the playoffs. And
even though he wrote that in our faces a little with an Instagram
post. It's fine. he got DFA'd twice and sent down to the minors twice.
Team Leonis forever.
But it's, you know, it's,
it's, I think that what you have to do is you have to look at it from a common sense point of view. Like, the Mariners knew they were out of it, right, at some point there while they they theoretically should have also known Guillermo was hurt. Yeah. He is your one of your assets. You have Hanneman there. Like, right. Why not? It doesn't make any sense from a managerial perspective. And so yes. That's what leads me to believe that there wasn't a clear communication. Either Guillermo was masking the injury or something wasn't right with that. Because it doesn't make common sense to run an injured player out in a fruitless playoff. Like, that's just not good human management, and I've seen better human management in other aspects of the organization, so something's not squaring.
It was odd. I guess I'm curious in terms of the and I think we'll talk about this over the upcoming months, but they've assembled this fleet of at least passable relievers, and in the lower levels, guys who look like they could be, you know, pretty legit relievers. And we've heard Jerry say, you know, they're going with a pitching wolf pack mentality. And so, you know, I'm very curious about how that all is going to play out, and if they are going to really try and do something dramatic, because I think there's a potential for that. You know, you have a team with several pitchers who have talent, but either have injury issues, like Felix and Paxton, or a history of injury issues, like Felix and Paxton, or are guys who have had effectiveness through the first and maybe the second time through the order, but definitely have hit the wall a lot
the third time through the order. Yeah, but yeah.
Which I think is true around baseball.
Good example of that.
Exactly. And I think Erasmo is a similar type of pitcher. Yeah. Posey, I think, projects to be that type of guy as well. You know, I mean, Moore also probably has some of that. Just guys who, you know, if you don't have wipeout, strikeout stuff, you know, you're going to often be fine the first couple times through, but if you're not making people, you know, corkscrew, you know, Bugs Bunny spin occasionally, then, you know, the third time through, guys just get more comfortable. I'm not saying this in like a, well, you know, that's just how the game is. You know, like, we see it. You know, you can see it in number, you know, in the jumps in WRC Plus the third time through the order.
No one other than Paxton in the Mariners pitching staff, period, is intimidating, except maybe Edwin Diaz.
Right.
He's got scary stuff. Paxton has scary stuff, but
James Pazos actually would be my least favorite person to face, because I Paxton I trust to throw strikes and not hit me.
Yeah.
Pazos has so much run on his fastball that everything might kill me. But even that
is different than, like, going into the mindset of, like, a guy that's wild. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I think downgrades Diaz's intimidation factor. Is like, yeah, when he's on, and when he's not, it's, you just know that you can go up there and maybe stand up there and take a walk. So,
I think your point there is exactly in line. Is, you know, they're going to have to do something slightly similar to what they did last year, in that they were using a lot of guys. But I think if they have even a modicum of health, they have the opportunity to do it in a way that they're in control of, and that, you know, guys aren't just having to constantly be shuttled because of things that are outside of their control. I think you can have a situation where we know, okay, tonight, you know, Felix we've got Felix slotted for two times through the order, and whether that's four innings or whether that's six innings or whether that's, you know, somewhere in there, you know, and then we've got Emilio for two innings, and then we've got so-and-so. You know, you can plan for guys to do that and then, you know, have a consistent, you know, sort of rotation of, as Jerry has talked about, you know, the last two guys on the end of the bullpen, that can be a sort of rotation of maybe six players, so that, you know, you've got two guys, you know, coming up, you know, one guy comes up, you know, maybe it's Ryan Garten that day, and he's there, he's ready, you know. You have Tacoma right there. Like, there are worse drives that you'd make for a single game. You know, I've done, you know, had a game one day in Olympia and then had a different game another day, you know, or that same day later up in Lynwood. You know, like, guys make these kind of drives all throughout baseball, you know, in their careers. And so I think there's a way to make it work, but it has to be something that everyone's on board with and they're a little bit out in front of.
Yeah.
And not having to be constantly on their heels about. And that's a fine line.
And in some ways, that is the mentality that you have to... And that's what they started doing in Tacoma this year, was they were like, okay, none of you are starting pitchers anymore. All of you are long relievers. Everybody's a long reliever. Get to know, get to embrace your new identity as a long reliever. And I think that even though that's where the game is going, that's hard for guys. It's hard when you have spent, you know, 10 years of your life or more thinking of yourself in this certain way. It's hard when you know how starting pitchers get paid compared to how relievers get paid. You know, even Davinsky says, well, I want to be a starter again. He is pitching as a long reliever like he wants to earn his way back into the rotation.
Right.
And has said that that's, you know, a goal of his. I don't know where he's at now. Those comments were a while ago. He's embracing. But until they pay the Davinsky role commensurately with the starting pitching role, or even just on the same... even something in the neighborhood, you're not going to have guys who want to do it. And I don't know. I think you've got to start with younger guys who are just hungry to get out there and want that role, or guys who know that maybe they don't have great effectiveness as a starter three times through, and two times through sounds really good to them. And I think Erasmo might be that guy a little bit. It's less pressure. And so you can go, Erasmo just seems to have that personality type where he's light, he's happy, he wants to go out there and do well, but maybe is able to recognize that his stuff plays up well against certain teams. Was it the Astros that he just looked dominant?
Yeah, he had like the weird... There was like a stretch of weird starts that the Mariners had against the Astros that were all really good.
Yeah,
but
Andrew Moore had a good start against the Astros.
Yeah, but they couldn't hit that whole series.
No, they were so horrible. They could have won any of those games. Yeah. And that was...
Be
that
good
was so
all at once, you assholes.
I was going to call them doofuses, but okay, well, yeah, that's fair.
I'm coming out swinging.
I mean, just... And knowing, too, like... Erasmo was throwing a ton of changeups and sinkers, cutters. What was he throwing?
He throws them all. I remember I listened to the game, but I didn't watch it.
I was at the game, and I kept looking up at the board to see, because he induced some really ugly swings. And you know,
he's such a funny dude.
He was having the time of his life, too. He was so delighted with himself on the mound.
Oh,
because
that was a game
off.
He was so bummed he gave up the homer, right?
He was incredibly bummed, distraught. I happened to have my friend Carl had, like, company tickets, so I got to sit, like, really, really close, like, just four or five rows back. And it's amazing what you can see on guys' faces, and, you know, with the body language and everything. And Erasmo was just, he was having the best time. and he was getting so many ugly swings and misses on. So it was just, that's an example where it was a really good matchup. Yeah. And maybe if they'd had someone else who could plug in after that, he wouldn't have been stretched to the point where he had to give up the homer. But also, as you said, hit. Be good all at once, doofuses, please.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say, because we saw last year, like, it's a really difficult thing to constantly shuffle guys if you're only doing so because someone was ineffective or someone got hurt.
Yeah.
But if they really, you know, if you, I think it's fair to say that a lot of guys who are decent pitchers in AAA or in AA can work an inning or two in the majors and can be all right. But it's a really difficult strategy to make work because one, you know, you're putting your neck out there if you're a GM and a coach in saying, all right, we're just going to recognize that our starting pitchers aren't going to do what starting pitchers have done for 150 years. You know, they're going to do, we've seen it, you know, in part elsewhere, and, you know, like Davinsky you mentioned as an example of, this is not something guys want to do. They want, you know, they want their names to have SP next to them because SPs get paid much more than RPs, and you know, you get neat stats and you get wins, which I realize are pointless.
But translate into arbitration dollars if you are not at the point where you're getting a huge huge contract,
right,
which you get from having SP next to your name.
Exactly. It not only just pride-wise matters, but it legitimately translates into how much money you make. And, you know, there's just like we talked about earlier on with the Astros, like their ability to control guys' salaries, you know, and control their better players' salaries is the main reason why they've been able to be successful. This is something that, you know, that's done in a way that, you know, is sort of systemic and, you know, well, that's the rules of the league and everyone knows it and you can be a little frustrated about it, but it's, you know, you're not going to change everything necessarily. This is one team going out and potentially saying, hey, we're going to do this strategy that might work and might make us a better team, but it's probably going to take money out of most of y'all's pockets, and you need a lot of buy-in. You need a lot of people to buy in if that's the type of road they're going down. And so I'm interested. I'm into it. I think that there's going to be a time in the next 10 years where we're going to have essentially a team that pitches, every pitcher goes no more than two innings, and it's going to be very weird and also kind of infuriating, unless the rules change about number of pitching changes you can do.
Yeah.
But you know, that it might be what the Mariners need, because if you have a bunch of guys who can't stay healthy to pitch 180 innings or aren't good enough that you want them pitching 180 of your limited innings.
And if the ball continues to fly like the ball flew this year, which I have not been huge on the ball is juiced, but looking at the cumulative numbers, I mean, maybe it'll even out next year. If these same home run numbers hold up for next year, I think I'll jump on the ball is juiced train.
Yeah.
Because I know MLB cares a lot about growing the game, and they think that the way to do that is with tons of offense,
mm-hmm.
which sucks for those of us who really love pitching, right?
Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, it was, you know, because you had the swing of everyone's just striking out all the time. Holy shit. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God, which was, you know, 2010 to 2014. And now everyone's still striking out a bunch because pitchers are still good and whatnot, but you know, and maybe they could have said, well, we'll lower the mound or something. You know, I would be interested to see alternate proposals to sort of even out and get the ball in play more, but you know, baseball players are huge and strong now, and if they make contact, it's gonna go further.
Yeah, I mean, now we have like 10-year-olds drinking protein shakes on it, right? Like,
yep.
10-year-olds are like spirulina, yes. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I don't know what you ate when you were 10, but and I was not an elite athlete, but yeah, I ate like Cheez-Its and High C's and a lot of other hyphenated foods. If a food is hyphenated, it's probably not good for you. I'm just saying. So we are, I mean, we're growing people bigger and stronger and mm-hmm. getting better nutrition into them sooner and getting better training into them sooner. Driveline is encouraging guys to take a gap year and just work on their stuff. I was thinking about this the other day and the difference between college players and high school players and, how quickly high school players seem to come along once they get into professional baseball versus college players who you would assume have an edge because they've been playing for so long at such a high level. But just think of how many different ways your attention is divided in college.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're plucked out of high school and you're like, you're a baseball player now, and that's all you are, and that's all you do, it just narrows your world down really quickly, which I think is...
Mm.
Has both positive and negative effects. I like a world where all baseball players have to go to college. I just think that that's better for people in general. Although then that raises a lot of questions about international signings and sets sure. up kind of a weird dynamic there. But yeah, I mean, we're getting guys younger than ever before and molding them into baseball players from very early on, which can kind of overlap with this idea of if your identity is an identity of starting pitcher, it's really hard. It's threatening to have to give up a piece of that identity. So, unfortunately, I think you get more buy-in to the Wolfpack mentality with guys like Ryan Garten. Mm-hmm. Than you do with guys like David Price, who
yeah.
was weirdly being used as a reliever in Boston. That was weird, right?
A lot of things, a lot of weird stuff with Boston.
Down the stretch there. Yeah. Just a weird, that seems like a weird toxic place to me.
When I looked at their roster coming in this year, I thought,
oh crap.
God.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're going to shred everyone. And
they should have shredded everyone.
It was very peculiar how
unshreddy
yeah.
their offense
I mean,
was.
You know, especially considering Chris Sale was better than anyone like expected. Like,
he's so yeah. stupid good. He is so stupidly good.
So are you right-handed or left-handed?
Lefty, you know that.
Okay, that's what I thought. But when you step in the box, you're a lefty as well?
Yes.
When you're a hitter?
Yes, yes. Okay. All those times I step in the box, yes.
That's what I'm asking
Where
about.
I'm extremely comfortable and, yeah. Yes, yes, lefty.
Well, so who is your nightmare, like, person to hit against?
Are you kidding me? Like, they're all nightmares.
Well, yeah, but like the nightiest.
The midnightmare. Who would I be most afraid of facing?
Yeah.
Honestly, I think I would be most afraid, like, McCullers would just make me look so dumb. He would make me look so dumb and bad because I would just flail. I think deception. But no, I mean, I can't imagine anything more terrifying than having to face Chris Sale. And
he has been just like the most horrifying thing I could imagine facing this side of Randy Johnson, which, you know, he's essentially like, he's about 90% of Randy Johnson. You know, it's like if you shrunk Randy Johnson a little.
Just like put him in the dryer for a couple seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, congrats. You have still the insane slider, still the really hard but not quite 100 mile per hour fastball, still the arm slot where, oh, it's coming out at your, like, it's coming out just a little bit behind your butt. That's where he's releasing the ball. Awesome. Yeah, you know. But, I mean, to the Red Sox, I mean, you know, so they fired John Farrell.
Yes. This is moving us into a new topic, talking about, let's talk manager decisions.
Yes. Which is, I think, sure, understandable. I mean, I don't follow Boston media goings-on as much as I think probably much of the baseball world, because we're not on the East Coast out here, but it seemed like he was, you know, the team was underperforming, and usually when the team underperforms once or twice in a row, then the manager gets fired. And I guess, sure, John Farrell had to go. But, you know, it's also the team that was, what, they won 93 games? 94 games? You know, they won their division. They, 93 and 69.
Mm. Nice,
thank you. was gonna give you the shot, first crack at that. Made the playoffs. Were reasonably competitive against an ungodly Houston team.
Yep.
You know, that was it. That wasn't enough. You know, and then Girardi gets fired today for leading a team that I think a lot of people didn't pick to even be a playoff team.
No.
This year. You know, it was like, oh, they're going to be a problem, and they're going to be streaky, and they're going to be a huge problem next year and for the next several years.
Right.
But this year, like, because no one expected Aaron Judge, you know, it was like, oh, wow, that team became the fourth best team in the American League, and like near might have been better than Boston, but just had, you know, was right around it. Bye. You know, like, it's fascinating to see three teams, with Dusty Baker as well, being fired, that had strong seasons, you know, consecutive strong seasons, and firing their manager.
So weird. So weird. Yeah. And, like, various other coaching staff members, too. Like, you know, you have hitting coaches moving around and pitching coaches moving around. And
the Mets fired their coach, but, like, the Mets were also terrible. Yeah. But,
with something like Dusty Baker, I feel like it's a sacrificial move. I don't agree with it, but, okay, well, here's a team that has for several years not risen to their potential. What can we possibly do? Mm. I mean, you could have fixed your bullpen earlier in the year. That's a choice you could have made.
Mm-hmm.
So out goes Dusty, because the there will be blood. The gods demand their sacrifice. The media gods, I guess. It's just a way to say, like, hey, we're doing something. We see there's a problem, so we're going to make this move, because it's easier to make a move and get criticized later than to not make a move and immediately get criticized.
What do you think Joe Girardi's worst season was as a manager?
I don't know. What was it? I mean, are you just going off the numbers? Or?
Well, You could say it was 2016, which was where they finished fourth in the AL East because the AL East was really freaking good. And that was when he went 84-78.
Also, the headlines around Girardi are really weird because they're like, Joe Girardi, too smart for his own good. Joe Girardi, the thing that made him good is actually his downfall. Like, what? Like, yeah. Joe Girardi lacking the human touch. Like, what is this narrative? It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Like, it's almost like we are inventing excuses for him to not be good at his job. I mean, I'm not any huge Girardi fan, but whenever I saw him speak, he seemed to me like a guy who was mostly a straight shooter.
Yeah.
You know, real, seemed to say real things.
Yeah.
It was just weird that this Joe Girardi's a robot narrative developed.
Hey, the Yankees haven't had a losing season in my lifetime. That's a bummer.
Wow. Dusty Baker, John Farrell, and Joe Girardi were a combined 76 games above 500. All led their teams to the postseason and all lost their jobs. Yeah, screw working back east. if I was a manager in the AL East, the NL East, whatever, one of those major media markets, and I lost my job, I would be running for Seattle. Actually, Dusty Baker sent Seattle, hey, would you maybe be interested in hiring me?
Yeah.
And never heard back from us, which I am shamed about.
Do we remember when that was? Because was that...
It was before they hired Service. It was after they fired McClellan.
Okay.
So he inquired about it back then, which is upsetting to me.
Yeah.
I
have a mixed emotions about Dusty because my initial impression on him is, Mark Pryor, Kerry Wood, pitcher, the Giants sort of starters of, Jason Schmidt and Kane and guys getting sort of ground down by overuse. But,
right.
And I don't know that that was, whether it's just been in situations where he's been the manager for teams that have had really dominant starting pitchers, because the Nationals, again, were a team. It wasn't like the starters were overused, like they were their best pitchers, and they were all really good, I don't know about that, but certainly he's a guy I like. I've enjoyed watching him, as a coach. But I think, sort of to tie it around to the Mariners does this have any impact, or does this, necessarily? How do we, what's the read we get on this for the Mariners? Is there a situation? Do you think any of these have an impact on the Mariners' current coaching staff as it stands?
Alas. I do not think so, which I'm not 100% sold on Scott Service.
No. I would consider myself not 60% sold on Scott Service.
Yeah.
In-game manager Scott Service, I have seen essentially, I don't think he's a complete dope, but he has not done anything to make me confident in him as an in-game tactician. And last year was not a great barometer because for a lot of the situations, the Mariners weren't really a team that allowed for tactics because it was, okay, this is the guy who hasn't thrown three innings in the last three games, so he's pitching next, or, okay, everyone, Evan Marshall's arm or hamstring exploded, and Gene Ma Chi just broke his, like, busted his finger. So whoever else is in the bullpen is in now. Like, you know, it's whatever. But I'm worried Scott Brosius becomes a candidate for the Yankees. Although it would be kind of weird considering they essentially would just be replacing their catcher from the mid-90s and late-90s with their third baseman from the mid and late-90s. You know, that other than that, maybe Acta is in consideration for the Yankees job. I feel like I saw that he's not, but I don't know that for sure.
It feels like Acta is viewed as a retread. When he didn't get the Mets job, I sort of looked at a lot of what Mets fans were saying, and I was very surprised to find that the primary emotion was relief, which I was like, what? Well, he had a very poor managerial career. Like, he had a crap team.
Yeah.
He had some real crap teams to be in charge of there, and I think he actually did some good things. And then that's also, I know that the Dominican League Lidom isn't exactly on the same level, but he stepped in when the Aguilas last year were struggling and had lost a bunch of games, and he turned that whole season around. I mean, maybe he didn't personally, but when he got there, things started going very differently, and they wound up, you know, in the championship. So,
yeah,
I just feel like it's a weird perception. And given how few managers of color there are, I think it's sometimes kind of a bad look to cast too many aspersions on. Yeah, it's hard for me not to feel a little bit of a weird echo when people are busy complaining about ACTA, for example.
And personally, I would be pretty thrilled if ACTA saw himself promoted to the Mariners' main, you know, manager. And, you know, Service doesn't have to get tossed, but, you know, put him somewhere in a, you know, front office role or in a, like...
So here's the thing that I think with managers. Like, I think that the role of a manager is stupid because you're a figurehead for everything that's going on. Joe Girardi is obviously not a problem for the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees didn't have a problem, but they felt like
there was one time where, like, Chapman liked something on Instagram about Girardi getting fired, which is, like...
But I mean, that whole thing is and then there's the controversy about appealing the check swing. I mean, that was him, right?
Appealing the check swing. Okay. Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, he had some weird stuff, but sorry, you were explaining sort of
figurehead. So managers are figureheads. If you look at Scott Service in the dugout, if you watch what he does during a game, he is he's very rarely on his own. He'll stand on his own and watch the game, but then he'll turn and he'll talk to Brosius. He'll turn and he'll talk to Bogar. He'll turn and he'll talk to Acta. He'll turn and he'll talk to Edgar. You see him talking to players. Like, it feels to me like what is going on there is collaborative. It's not him just deciding to do things. He always seems to be in consult with his coaching staff. So I think as far as, like, questioning his game decision-making, I don't think that that's purely... I don't think that's purely him. You see him talking to Mel, too. Like, that's not just him making the calls on who's coming in from the bullpen. We do need a new bullpen coach, and I would be happy to see Lance Painter in that role, but also want him to stay in Tacoma and continue developing arms down there and having a bigger voice in developing some of our players who need more development. But I'll be interested to see who they put into that role, and I'm going to hope for some better communication there. I just wonder about Scott Service as a person, because he is so measured is a nice way to say it, and bland is, I think, the meaner way to say it. And I just wonder how that reflects how he interacts with a clubhouse that is kind of noisy, led by a lot of Latins, led by a lot of the Latino players. You know, how is that? Is he a good reflection of the team that's there? And I guess I just feel like I don't have enough information to answer this question, which is why I'm always kind of up in the air about Service.
Yeah, I completely agree on your appraisal of the role of managers. And, you know, in, there is a degree of in-game management, but as you said, like, he's very, you know, I think it is a strength of his that he's cognizant of, I have a staff that has a lot of experience around me. I am going to lean on them in different circumstances. But, you know, I also, and I think his best asset has been that he is skilled at delegating, which maybe is damning with faint praise, but
no, actually, and I will say this, as a manager myself, delegation is like 85% of the job.
For sure. And, you know, like, he's very good, and I think DePoto does this well as well, which, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be their best skill, but is something that they do well, is communicating with the team, communicating with the players, you know, making sure that especially the sort of veterans on the roster have,
yeah,
exactly, have the guys who are there for a long time, you know, have input and have, you know, sort of a connection to the decisions that are being made and sort of the reasoning behind the process.
Yeah, like Jerry was saying at Lookout Landing Night, he and Service called Cano, called Seager, called Cruz about Valencia. Like, do you want this guy? He is a polarizing figure in a lot of clubhouses. Are you okay with us bringing him on? And, you know, I know that we do this a lot at Lookout. We, something that we really work on is being collaborative and talking through ideas with each other and just making sure that what we're putting out represents all of us and represents the very best that we think that we can do at that moment. And it's always better. More brains equals better, right?
Definitely. And so, you know, I like that Service is good at, you know, interacting with, you know, and manage, as far as we can tell, is good at, you know, interacting and managing players and personalities and what is, you know, important. I don't, you know, it's tough to say that there's a huge impact for the manager on much else. And so if they're, you know, if a guy's having success and is delivering good, you know, good feedback from the players, then, you know, I think that's as much as anything what you want to look for. He is such a bland turtle when he interacts with the media and when he interacts with us. And, you know, I think you could see, like, he's got sort of a goofy, dry sense of humor, maybe, but, like, it is less satisfying, especially, you know, it's less satisfying, especially when the team is struggling, you know, when you just, you want, understandably as a fan, to have sort of an avatar of what your feelings are, of frustration.
A lot of people really miss Lloyd for that reason.
Yeah, and I completely get that. And I,
Lloyd embodied the dormant rage inside every Mariners fan.
Exactly.
So perfectly. And Service is just so very Midwest.
Yeah. And I, you know, that particular facet doesn't bother me all that much because, you know, whether you're screaming a bunch about it you know, or not, the things are still happening. So if you're, you know, if your patience is, you know, able to translate to the players, then and sort of the you're doing the right process, we, you know, the results will come, you know. I you know, and not being reactionary, I can appreciate that, but it is not as satisfying as watching Lloyd kick you know, kick and scream, or Lou
throw a base,
chuck a base. Ugh, no, yeah. That's, you know, that's fun.
It is fun.
You know, and sometimes you need that, and
yeah, just like a
it is entertaining.
Release.
Like the times that service has gotten tossed have been so, like, oh, did he just get tossed? he waved his wrist. He flicked his wrist. Someone hold him back.
It's so impossible to tell, like, what resting service face is versus to be tossed. And, you know, I appreciate him. Milkus, one of our writers, once described him when we did the photo day this year as you're disappointed.
Was this Milkus, I believe?
What?
Was it Milkus?
Yeah, Milkus did this.
Yeah.
It was the disappointed face of your dad before he goes out to crush some beers with his Coast Guard buddies. And I was like, yes. For some reason, that feels right and true to me.
Yeah, but the coast is Lake Superior. Yeah. It's not
an actual
ocean. Don't get too crazy. Well, I think we're gonna wrap up pretty soon here. I did want to get to one of our questions here because we just wanted to have a quick chat about this for you, but as we look forward to free agency, and I think we're going to have a lot of stuff that you and I are both really excited about in the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
We'll need to maybe talk off air about what, you know, whether we're waiting for projections or what we're, you know, some of the stuff, but a lot of the proposals and ideas that we have, you know, I think we don't need to sit on too long for it, because I want to get out and
it's
start
hot stove
it.
Season, baby.
It is. Jacob Hanneman's getting claimed.
Yeah.
Mike Freeman's DFA'd. Light that shit.
Things are happening.
The question here comes from James Robert at Junkball Pitchin. No G, just the N.
Nice.
How much will the new draft pick compensation for free agency affect the Mariners' presence in that market this offseason, and is this front office ready to spend?
Oh, what a good question.
It is a very good question, and honestly, we could maybe build an entire podcast off of that, and I suspect we probably will be talking about that all winter.
Yeah.
But Kate, do you want to sort of take your first swing at it?
Yeah, my gut instinct is if anything regarding losing a draft pick comes up, it would have to be a player who they feel like they can get, who they like to fit their system, and they feel like they can get on a pretty decent deal. But I don't think Jerry wants to surrender any draft picks right now. Mm-hmm. Not while he's trying to restock the farm and build a legacy. And I think it's also, it'll be telling if we see any trades out of that, but I don't see Kyle Lewis or Sam Carlson or Evan White going anywhere this offseason either. I think that we're trying to build a new dynasty.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there are enough options that won't cost, that you don't have to go after, you know. Arrieta going to get a qualifying offer. Alex
and
Wood.
They wouldn't spend
or not Alex
anyway.
Wood. Alex Cobb maybe gets a qualifying offer. Should get a qualifying offer, but just because I don't know if Tampa
wants to spend,
is willing to risk him taking it.
Yeah.
Which he probably wouldn't, because he'll probably just take a long-term deal. But still, you know, that's a danger. But the new qualifying offer system, for those of you who are familiar with the old ones, or those of you who are not familiar with it at all, is, you know, essentially you off a team that has had a player for several years on their roster can offer a qualifying offer to that free agent, and that number changes every year based on it's the mean salary of the league's top 125 players. So this year, it's going to be, I believe, $18.1 million. So a 1 year it'd be a 1 year contract for $18 million essentially. And if the player, if you sign a player that a qualifying offer was made to, there's sort of three different tiers that you can fall in, at that you'll have to pay some degree of compensation. The Mariners will fall in the middle tier, which is a team that did not exceed the luxury tax threshold, but, contributes to revenue sharing. Which means they're not sort of a tiny market, but they're not going ham. And so they would forfeit their second highest draft pick, which would be the second round pick, and also forfeit $500,000 from next year's international bonus pool, so for international amateurs. So essentially it would be $500,000 away from international amateurs and their second round pick next year, which, as you said, I don't think they're likely to do. But that doesn't really preclude them from spending on a lot of guys. You know, Yu Darvish, not going to cost a qualifying offer because he was traded during last season. I'm not sure. I think Lance Lynn would apply for a qualifying offer.
I think
Since he's been with the Cardinals for forever. Tyler Chatwood probably would as well. Who's the Rockies starter. There will be a few, you know, reasonable options out there that the M's can go after if they don't want to give up a draft pick. And in terms of spending, what we saw from John Stanton was that they are willing to add to the payroll from what it ended up being this year. And if we just assume they're cutting Iwakuma and Gallardo, that means they'll probably, plus the guys that are leaving in free agency, that probably means they have about $25 million to spend. So I could see them spending $25 to $30 million, which in that sense, yeah, I don't think they go
hog
crazy,
wild.
Yeah. But yeah, but there's absolutely, you know, I think probably you see another 5 to 10 million added on, especially if there's a deal for someone that really, really fits. Because I don't think you see them spend more money on the bullpen, because I don't think they really need that, which is a good place to be in. And they could either go after outfielder, it's really going to be up to them if they want to go big on starting pitcher and fill in little bits in the outfield and first base, or if they want to try and split it evenly, which would be tougher. And then, you know, you're probably looking at, a more meager option in starting pitching. But I think, as we talked about, you know, essentially trading for Mike Leake was signing Mike Leake,
yes,
as a free agent for a 3-year contract. So that's, I think, a good place to start from. So we'll see. We're going to see some moves. We're going to see some moves that maybe we can easily anticipate, and we're going to see some four-dimensional thinking that maybe is too clever by half, but I'm so excited for it, and I know you are too, Kate.
Yeah, it's not going to be, I think, the blowout, you know, transaction a day that we saw last season or the season before. As the roster comes more and more into line with what I think DePoto visualizes for it, we'll see. As every year, there's always shuffling in the bullpen. There obviously are these big needs,
yeah,
elsewhere on this, but I don't think it's going to be like you know, I literally sometimes could not keep up with the amount of minor league deals, shifting people around the trade. Like, every day waking up was a chore. And
yeah.
Like, what did you do today, Jerry?
Yes. So I should note.
It will be calmer, I think. And that will make the moves, for better or for worse, the fewer moves that I think there are, stand out a little more sharply.
Which would be good.
Like, and if that Zepchinski deal gets done this year, I think that attracts a lot more flack than it did last year when it was kind of overshadowed.
It got some flack, but it was...
It would get some real flack this year.
Yeah. I will say, I don't think the Mariners spend big at first base. I don't think they go for Hosmer or for Santana. I know they've been linked to both of them, but both of them will have qualifying offers.
And
been linked to Lorenzo Cain, who also will have a qualifying offer, who I also don't think makes a lot of sense for them.
And
I want Cameron Maben.
No.
You don't want Cameron
Maben? No, I don't want Cameron Maben.
Aww.
I mean, maybe. It would be satisfying to use him to torture.
He's so fun. He's fine. He's fun.
His defense doesn't grade out as well as you would think it does. I feel like we see Cameron Maben consistently play his best games against us, but then I see him play against other teams, and I'm like, wait.
I think he's sort of one of those players where it's like he can play every outfield position fine, you know, like he's sort of in that a little bit of step up from Gamel, but it's like if we can't get Dyson
or somebody of that athletic caliber, I would accept Maben as like a poor man's version of the athletic outfielder. But man, when I think about the outfield, I just think about wanting a bat out there, some steady, trustworthy bat.
Well, you know who you want then.
Who do I want?
Your best friend from Kansas City.
Eh?
The man who terrorized.
No.
You. Oh no. You don't want Melky?
No.
The Milkman.
I actually would love that.
I know.
He's secretly not a bad defender either. Like, he's sneakily athletic out there.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I've seen him.
I don't know if it was like just to torture me, but I felt like every time I watched Melky, he was making some catch. I was like, what are you doing? You're Melky Cabrera.
I think it may have been a flash in the pan, because at least by the let's just say the defensive metrics
are not
don't
kind.
Really approve.
they don't agree with my eye test based on seeing him 3-8. But what if he's my next Adam Lind and he is good?
I don't think I can live with him continuing to be annoying for like 7 games a year.
Yeah, fair. As opposed,
there are a lot of outfielders this year.
There are. I think that Boston is going to throw a gazillion dollars at JD.
Yeah.
He's going to be really hotly contested. But I think no other team is as offense hungry as Boston.
Yeah.
They really feel like that big bat is what is going to push them over the limit, which I have questions about that. But that and first base, I don't know that they were thrilled with Moreland's production there. And they're going to be major players, and like, let Boston go out and spend all the money, and then let's see like what is left over after that.
Kate,
what?
I'm just going through the outfield options, and I'm getting excited, because there are a lot of players that I actually think could be pretty good fits here.
You know that I am on team pay Boston to take Ruzny Castillo off their hands,
which was your idea, really.
So give you credit where credit is due. but you have now suckered me into this.
Hell yeah.
I think we could get him for salary relief and not have to give up anything on the already very thin farm, and there is a potential for a very good all-around player there. Like, do it. Make it happen, Jerry. Do it. So that is my outfield off-season wish. Who is yours? As you're staring at this list with heart eyes.
So, I'm not going to say this is my official desire, because there are a lot of good options, and because there are a lot of good options, I think it's very important that they are patient, the Mariners are patient about where they go with their cashola.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think you might be able to get Curtis Granderson pretty cheaply. And however you might think he's been better than that.
But he's so old.
He's 36. And yeah, he's really old, but he's still like, he's still passable defensively. Like, he's not the 36 of like Nelson Cruz and like, oh no. and you know, I think you can, you don't have to pay that much for him, I think, because he's got power. He walked 13.5% of the time this year. Like, that's nutty. And he had a .228 BABIP. Like, that's a guy, I think, you know, he's coming off already having made a bunch of money. He's not even on the Dodgers World Series roster.
No.
Like, he's, I think, gotten, I think he's had very high profile struggles that have overshadowed that he was fine. Like, he was on the Mets, who were terrible, and he was not bad, and then he went to the Dodgers and was really bad with a .153 BABIP. So, anyways, we're going in a lot longer than we need to on this stuff, but we're gonna be going over it and getting excited.
This is just
and
a little tease for what we'll, I know we'll be stringing this out over the course of the off season, but we have to start recording now before Jerry starts making moves, because you know the instant the World Series confetti rains down, he is going to be on the phone. So
yes, indeed. All right.
Well, that's all we've got for this week. Tune in next week when I ask John who he dreams about at first base. I'm just picturing you napping with like a little thought bubble of Yonder Alonso over your head.
Do robots dream of electric Yonder?
All right. Thank you to those of you who sent in questions. We didn't do Isabel's question about what candy each of the bullpen members give out in celebration of Halloween.
Yes. Edwin Diaz gives out just like, do you know those long sticks that were just like, they're like Twizzlers, but they were like nerds sticks.
Oh yeah, nerds ropes.
Yeah, yeah. Nerds rope. I think he's giving out nerds rope because I think he's just like constantly like chewing on it.
Yeah,
like out in the pen.
Also, that seems appropriately wacky for him.
It's wacky and like a little bit like, oh, you're still a kid, huh?
You're kid yourself. Buying the candy that you think would be. I'm pretty sure Dan Altavilla gives out mini toothbrushes. Offset.
He's that house.
He's the dentist house. Yeah. Wants you to take care of your teeth. They're very
dentist
important.
Dentist approved gum.
Very important assets.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was the only one that jumped into mind for me.
I think that's appropriate. Tony Zick is like the house you're terrified of going to.
Yeah, it's like the one that's like super decorated with like lights and music and everything.
And you like ring the doorbell and then like there's like a porch swing with like a scarecrow, but it is Tony Zick. but he does give out like the huge, like the king size, like Snickers bars and like the extra size Skittles bags.
Sure, to anyone who is brave enough to get all the way up there.
Exactly. Yeah, he's perpetually a mid transformation. Like, 10% transformation werewolf, so he might as well. And like we've seen him when he's not playing baseball, he's only wearing camo. Like
yeah.
That dude's dropping from the ceiling to deliver your candy. Like you
Mission
ring the doorbell
Impossible
and suddenly
style.
There's candy in your bag, and you felt like a breeze, but you didn't see
you didn't
anything.
See
and like one beard hair is slowly like
drifting
dropping
in
like
the
a
wind.
Feather.
Yeah,
yeah exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
I can see it. I feel like Shea Simmons also gives out the full-size candy bar, but when you
yeah.
open it up, you realize it's all broken.
Oh, it's a little, like it was dropped. It was smashed. Yeah.
This could be so good if it wasn't in pieces. That was
James Pazos has a, like, like a thing that like launches the candy at you, but it's pretty scattershot.
His whole
little...
front yard is just littered with candy.
Yeah.
But when it goes in the bag, it looks awesome.
Oh yeah, it's super cool.
The 5 out of 10 times that it works.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that's enough hijinking for today, I think.
Casey Lawrence made hot dogs. He mixed
oh, no.
He shows up just dressed in an American flag.
Oh, no.
He's got not Twizzlers, what are those? Fizzer, like, the yeah.
What?
Well, those little fizzer, like, firework things.
He's just got the wrong holiday entirely.
Yeah, well, he's nailing it, but it's not
he's
correct.
He's nailing it, but the wrong holiday.
Oh, well.
Oh no. Who's the...
He spent too much time in Toronto. It happens.
Aww. All right. Well, thank you to those of you who sent in questions and listened all the way through. I look forward to talking with you next week, John, after we've had another hopefully thrilling set of games from the World Series.
Yes.
Wow. I feel
yes.
Last night's game was like 4 games in 1. Like it just.
It's such a palate cleanser too. Like after watching this excruciating like. You are good at baseball, but only in these weird ways season. Like, just, I'm fully excited about baseball in a way that was, like, it was exciting but frustrating to watch the Mariners all year. I'm ready again. I'm already looking forward to spring training.
I tweeted this last night, but it is really fun to watch the two best teams in baseball go at it. Why
yeah.
don't they do this every year?
They should make a tournament or something.
It almost feels like an all-star game. Like the way that and you know, part of that is the ball was just flying out of Dodger Stadium last night, but
sure.
It felt like a home run derby practically,
mm-hmm.
but like with actual stakes attached. And
yeah.
It's just a question of who's going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really fun.
Absolutely. All right.
All right. So we will chat with you next week.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks so much for listening.
This tall was coming out of those clouds. All the clouds are being closed down. This place.